Hey everybody, it's Eric Balance coming to you with the Resilient Minds podcast, where I feature beautiful entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and experts in their field, where they help us discover their X factor, their experience of life, only to discover how they were able to accomplish and find out their Y factor, their big Y, their purpose in life. So join me as we get to discover the beauty of our minds and how can we really continue to go after the biggest and most wildest dreams while we continue to pursue and manifest our greatest intelligence that comes from the heart. Also, if you haven't, go check out the new alignment course that I've created at www.ericbalance.com/alignment, A-L-I-G-N-M-E-N-T. See you on the show. Welcome everybody to the Resilient Minds podcast. I'm super, super grateful and excited to have a new dear friend, Kara Golden, over here with us on the show. Thank you so much for being here. I'm super excited. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here too.
It's honestly such a pleasure, you know. And for those of you that don't know a little bit about Kara, she's the founder and CEO of Hint, best known for its award-winning Hint Water, the leading unsweetened flavored water.
Looks like this.
And the beautiful, yeah, amazing. And you know what? I actually thank you, by the way, because you sent me like deodorant and some like really nice, like also your book. And I'm really excited because it was really kind of you to send, first of all, these gifts. But you've been named the EY Entrepreneur of the Year in 2017 in Northern California and one of InStyle's 2019 Badass 50. You've been the VP of Shopping Partnerships at America Online, and you, of course, have your own show, The Kara Golden Show.
I do.
I love it. So tell me a little bit about your first book, Undaunted, which has ended up on the Amazon bestseller. And because if anybody wants to know a little bit about it, I'd love for them to know why you wrote that book. You know, what's the reason behind it? What was kind of like the gas that made you write a book, which I still haven't written one yet. Everyone's telling me to write a book, so it's a huge accomplishment. But I'd love to know, like, what was the reason?
Well, it's interesting. The book actually came out of my journal, and which I was journaling for 5 years. I was a journalism major. And so I had always thought about, you know, writing and thinking about things. And it was really because I was doing so much traveling, doing a lot of public speaking, that I'd get back to my room. And sometimes I'd meet someone, or people would ask me in the Q&A at the end a question. And I'd start to think, well, how would I answer it if I had more time? And what I found over and over again, that a lot of my thinking and perhaps a lot of, you know, how I would respond to people to get them to really understand a little bit more was share a story. And I've always felt that through stories, you can help people to understand, even if they aren't a beverage entrepreneur or they've never been in an industry, but you start to explain why you think the way that you think about things. And so as I started writing, after a few years, I counted the pages, because the book, the journal was getting pretty thick, and it was about 600 pages. And I said to a friend of mine who's authored a few different books, I said, how do I bind my journal? What do you think is the best way to bind my journal and get it out to lots of people? And she said, are you asking, how do you write a book? And I said, no, I still run a company. That's just way too daunting to write a book. It's going to take me so much time. I don't even know where to start. You know, I don't know anything about publishing. And she said, you've already written it. So probably the hardest thing about writing a book, frankly, was editing my journal down, because no one's going to read a 600-page book. And so taking stories out and basically getting it to just over 200 pages was the hardest part about writing a book. And then also, I think in, you know, there's lots of different ways to publish a book. You can self-publish or you can go with a big publishing house. When I was looking at the publishing houses, the interesting thing was that there was this perception that female entrepreneurs, their stories, they don't really sell lots of books. And I was like, what? I mean, you know, that's crazy. And then they would show me examples of where, you know, some of these female entrepreneurs, that genre just hadn't sold a lot of books. Not that it wasn't interesting. And so I really believed though that my stories didn't just apply to female entrepreneurs, that I said, my story really applies to all entrepreneurs. And I think probably the most exciting thing about my book is that I've heard from so many people who have never even thought about being an entrepreneur, but especially during the pandemic. And I think you're a great example of this. Maybe you don't consider yourself necessarily a, you know, an entrepreneur, but you're, you know, you are thinking about other things and about how, you know, you're discovering new things along the way. And so my book has really ended up in a lot of different places and a lot of different communities and groups where people are thinking about maybe being an entrepreneur, or what are the skills that I talk about? What are the things that I talk about? Fear in particular is something that I talk a lot about in my book, and kind of just going out and trying. I think that for so many people, the idea of looking stupid or deciding that you can't do something because you don't have the right experience or you don't have the right connections versus actually going and trying and experiencing the journey. So,
is a good point, because two things here is, like, first thing is I definitely consider myself an entrepreneur. I've been a very conscious entrepreneur, and everything is like for impact for me. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's like, I really want to work with entrepreneurs that are for impact too, which is like the biggest opportunity in business of how we can really emphasize and really build that level of intelligence by bringing our ideas or our stewardship to the world by emphasizing it through our biggest mission, our biggest vision, our biggest way to show up in the world. And so that is a huge component for me, big time. And I'm really grateful that you asked, because you know, compassionate leadership is one of the fundamental experiences that I've had, is like, if I can be more compassionate with myself, guess what? Like, everybody around me is going to be way more compassionate as a result as well. And so the biggest thing that I'd understood is like, okay, in leadership, you know, we've had all the tools, the technology, the food, the water, the abundance to really bring the world to a level of equilibrium. What we've been struggling with is the leadership. And I believe that we need to really bring more compassion, which I believe is also the highest form of love. And I had a podcast earlier where we talked about the wise mind really being the fruition, the energy, the fuel to allow us to really bring the best of our leadership qualities, which is essentially our heart wisdom, our heart intelligence, our ability to serve in this world to each other. And we can do it together. We don't have to do it like separately from each other.
Mm-hmm. So no, I totally
I agree. Would love to know a little bit about, and this is to me so important, I would really love to know, you know, I always talk about on the podcast, I say, okay, you know, we contribute to our experience, or from our experiences, our X factors, right? And from our X factors, we create these Y factors, which are our big purpose, our big why. So is there something that you've experienced or has been like a really key pivotal role, a key pivotal understanding, a key pivotal indicator that has allowed you to contribute to your biggest mission, your biggest purpose of what you're doing today?
Yeah. You know, I think I was just sharing this story with somebody this morning. As a matter of fact, I think I came from tech. I didn't come from the beverage industry. And so for me, I, you know, had risen to be the youngest vice president inside of America Online, one of the few females at kind of that level. It all sounds great, right? And I felt that my day, every single day, was mentoring and managing and trying to help other people get to the next level, which again is great. But after a while, I think so often people find themselves in a position where they're, call it managing or mentoring or teaching, and yet they're not learning themselves. And so I ended up getting to a point where I was incredibly grumpy. I couldn't really define it. Yeah. I thought maybe I need to spend more time with my family or not be doing this in some way or whatever it is. But I think it really goes back to kind of the why there. And I think so often, frankly, it's what we're taught to do. And you know, I won't get too deep into sort of education, but I think that the challenge, I think, with what we're teaching people to do is to get on a level, walk out, and maybe you take your first job and then you become a manager, then you become a director, then you become a VP, maybe you become a CEO, whatever it is. And your goal is to climb a ladder versus actually continuing to climb, but then be willing to go back down to the bottom and go learn when your soul really needs that. And I think that's a really, really important piece.
Wow.
That people need to, and it takes a lot of courage to be able to do that, because I think, you know, I mean, you've done it in some ways, like you've jumped to different countries, right?
Multiple ways. Wow.
Where you're learning along the way. And you can do that through travel. You can do that through jumping from one industry to another. And it's really, you know, you still take what you've learned and your experiences, maybe where you've had challenges to grow or where you, you know, and sometimes even that's hard too, because you decide, oh, well, I was able to fix this problem by doing X versus actually going and trying a whole new way of doing things, right? It's just, I think that the key thing that I've learned is that if you continue to learn and you continue to put yourself into situations where you're going to go learn new things, those to me seem to be the most happiest, the most fulfilled, the most excited people to get up every single day and go try more things. So again, you can do it through business or through friendships or through, you know, travel. There's lots of different ways to do that, but I think it's something that I've really realized overall is kind of a necessity in life for so many, that so many people are missing out on.
You know, I think you touched on something really beautiful, and I'm really curious to know, like, this essence of resilience, right? This continuation of, like, you know, going up to the top and then falling down and like rebuilding ourselves, right? Like, this element of resilience is something that I think is so important, like, through the human experience of life, because it's easy. No, sorry, I'm not going to say that. It's not easy to be in the corporate ladder. It's actually really fucking hard. Mm-hmm. Because, like, for me, I know that was something that it's difficult for me when I lived in that corporate world, right? But identifying something when you're up and down, when you're peaks and valleys, ebbs and flows, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, or you're taking on these different risks or these different opportunities, right? But you're doing the best that you can regularly. How important, if somebody's listening and they're like, listen, like, you know, right now they're creating these elements of their circumstances are affecting their internal wisdom, what, like, is really wanting to drive them to a new place or a new initiative or a new life circumstance. But they're looking around and they're listening to the people, they're looking around and they're paying attention to these, like, outside circumstances that are affecting them to make this decision. And the reason I'm saying this, because I was there, mm-hmm. right? I was in a place where I remember being stuck in a job that I didn't love. I actually dreaded Sundays because I was already hating the fact that tomorrow was going to be Monday.
Yeah.
And I was in this place where I was like, wow, like I do not want to live life. Like there's got to be more to life than this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in this miserable feeling. And I'm certain that there's people listening right now that have this experience all over the planet. You know, what is it that they can do or need to realize inside of themselves to like start recognizing that, listen, this, there is something more inside you. There is this resilience piece inside you that you need to define, decide. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah. Well, I think that it really, first of all, it's up to you, right? There's no one answer, I think, is the other thing. I mean, people have said to me, when do you know it's time to go or time to go do something, you know, new? I think that there is no right answer. And I think that the key thing that I always share with people is if you're not learning anymore, and, you know, obviously if it's not, you know, challenging or fun or however you want to define that, I think that that's a key piece. But a lot of what you're describing, I think, is very normal in society right now. And often you can't make the decision to actually go today because, I don't know, maybe you've got a house payment or you've got kids to feed or whatever, but set it as a goal, right? Set it as a goal that you want to be able to, you know, do something that you really want to be doing. And I think that there's so many options for people today to actually feel stuck, I think is not healthy. And again, I don't think that it always has to be tied to a job too. You can go out and explore through travel or through friendships or jump into, you know, new situations. I mean, I'll give you another example that I was sharing with somebody this morning, just as it relates to business. I mean, I never would go to conferences that were in my industry because I felt like I was going to learn the same stuff over and over and over again versus I would insert myself into industries that I was interested in and that I was curious about. Every single time I did that and I practiced that, I found things that I believed, things that I didn't know at all, that I didn't even know I was curious about. I met new people. All of these things. And then I came out really energized and I felt like I had, you know, maybe traveled to a far away place that I had never, you know, been before. And so again, I think that this idea of jumping into something new and entering something new it's scary. It's sometimes people are like, I don't know why I was there exactly, but instead go out and try. Because that's where you're going to be able to figure out exactly the things that you're more curious in.
I love it. I think that that's the most important. Is like no matter what, and trying something that we love. Because oftentimes there's people out there, they try things that they don't even like. It's something that doesn't even allow them, like. They take a moment to jump through hoops or things that they're not necessarily passionate about. And they're only to say to themselves, hey, like I have this unique gift, this unique purpose, this unique opportunity inside of myself, inside of who I am, like being this like self, like not having to prove anything.
Because so true.
Again, coming from my own experience is like, I've gone into business doing things to prove myself only to say, hey, like, this is not who I am. You know, this is not who I truly want to be. I need to make the money. How many things I know that I did to make a dollar to really, because I needed to create abundance, you know, and really it actually took me further away from the abundance that I knew that was deep inside of myself, right? It was such an important vessel to help me understand. And sometimes when we're so locked into this image that we're creating, right, because of the way people perceive us or the way we want to be shown in the world. And I know that, like, it was just lying to myself, right? Like,
yeah.
At the end of the day, we're just lying to ourselves. And I really, for anybody that's listening, the biggest thing that I've been clear on is follow those heartstrings. Follow what really means close to you, because it doesn't matter how many times you fail, then you will continue going, right?
It's
you
true.
Will continue because it's got, that's what's going to drive you, you know?
Yep. So true.
And I think that's like, I'm curious to know when you've had these difficulties, because I'm certain you've had these as well. You know, what has there been one that has been really resonant for you, that's been like really hard, that you want to share? And I'm sure that you've had many, but maybe there's one in specific that you're like, you know what, Eric, like this is something that allowed me to help me understand that my big purpose is so much bigger than myself, and it's why I continued going. Is there something that you want to share, any specific?
Well, I remember, I mean, one of the books that I share in the story in my book is a personal one around hiking the Grand Canyon. So I always try and take on things that I'm scared about. Every single year, I try and figure out, like, what am I really afraid of? And it's really easy because I'm afraid of heights. So I figure out, you know, something to go and challenge myself there. And for me, it was looking back and thinking about, you know, a memory that I had as a kid when I went to the Grand Canyon in Arizona, and thinking and looking down at the canyon and thinking, wow, it's really, really, you know, pretty far down. And I remember thinking, I wonder if I'll ever go hike that. No, I'll never go hike it because I was afraid of it. Right. And so later on in life, I thought maybe I should actually go and figure out how to hike it. And what are the steps that I could take in order to overcome that fear? And finally, I got a group of people together and we ended up planning 6 months from that point to go and take this on. And I had it really figured out. I thought that I, you know, had all the steps. I started early in the morning so I couldn't see the bottom of the canyon, and, you know, all these things that I thought I had it all together. I was nervous, but I had it all figured out. And then when I got into the canyon and I remember the light started coming up, the sun was rising. There was one of the scariest things that happened was a herd of goats almost like jumped over our head. My sister and I were hiking down and almost killed us. And I thought, number one, it didn't happen, right? But number two, that was never in the plan, right? And, yeah. And I thought, okay, we've survived, but you can plan for lots of different things, and things will come up in your journey that you get through, and you have to be grateful for getting through those times, but also you have to really understand that it really, things are going to happen and you do get through things along the way. And further, I mean, there were a number of instances where, you know, I ran into a rattlesnake, and I remembered, you know, walking back a few steps, and I kept thinking about where I learned that. And it was many, many years prior where I remembered the instance on when someone had told me that rattlesnakes can jump. Of course, I didn't have internet access, but that they could jump so many feet. And so I stepped back slowly. I knew the strategy to tackle that situation. And so I kept thinking that I have to trust in what I know, and that all the things up until this moment are things that are preparing me to be able to tackle those things. And then ultimately the rattlesnake went down the hillside into the Grand Canyon, thousands of feet, you know, and he went away. And so again, I left that entire journey very excited about what I had experienced. I didn't say never again. I was exhausted and tired, and there were lots of things, but I had an appreciation for what I had experienced. And I think that those are the stories that I like to share with people too, is that when you go and you take on these new, you know, challenges and things that are, you know, scary, you figure out a lot more about yourself and Absolutely. That you never wow, even yeah. anticipated doing.
So powerful. So true. So like, and I think that at the end of the day, right? Like, the ability to overcome any challenge really helps you create that confidence for yourself, and creating that confidence for yourself knows, like, it's the ultimate level of resilience, right? Like, so yeah, so I think that that's really important that you share that. And I love, thank you for sharing this story, because it's super like, yeah, rattlesnake, or like, I've seen so many big snakes in, when I was in Brazil, but they were still at a distance where I still like didn't fear my life.
Yeah.
But like big ones. And I was, there was one I remember seeing, it was just like by a waterfall, and I looked into the cave, and this huge, like big, I don't even know what it was, but it was gigantic. And I just like slowly backed off, like, it was scary. And he was just chilling there, you know, like, don't come bother me. But listen, I'm curious to know, like, what are you up to in the world right now? What's new and exciting for Kara? You know, where is the business headed? What are you, what's new and exciting? What's the changes?
Yeah,
what's the upcoming things?
Well, I started this company, Hint, as you mentioned at the beginning, yep. in a little over 16 years ago now. And my purpose was never to start a company to take on Big Sugar, or we're an unsweetened flavored water, but really to get myself to enjoy water. I found water really boring. And even though I said I should really drink water, I never did, because I found it really boring, and I would find other things to drink, soda, diet soda, and juice, and lots of other things, because I wanted more flavor than plain water. And when I looked for a flavored water, they all had sweeteners, whether it was sugar or diet sweeteners in it. And I just became addicted to sweet. And so that was my story, and how I, you know, got off of diet sweeteners was kind of my thing. Diet Coke in particular was really just slicing up fruit and throwing it in the water, and decided, could I actually make a product that really, you know, was readily available in stores in the US. Today, fast forward, we're the largest independent non-alcoholic beverage in the US that doesn't have a relationship Yay. With Coke, Pepsi, or Dr. Pepper, Snapple, only available in the US right now. But for me, it's been about building not just a new company, but also an entirely new category, which is called unsweetened flavored water. And, you know, look, I think if nothing good came from the pandemic, it's that people are really focused more and more on health and figuring out, how do I stay healthy? And I think that that's true all over the world, right? No one really wants to get this virus. No one, right? I mean, it's just, if people are wanting to stay more and more healthy. And so I think that the concept that I've always believed is, what you put in your body is really important. And Absolutely. Calling attention to that, I think, was my mission 16 years ago and still is. And I think more than anything, starting this company has made me realize how I wanted to help other people realize what I had realized about getting off of these diet sweeteners, and how I just dramatically changed. But from a business perspective, actually helping other people get healthy is a pretty powerful message. And also, you know, taking on the big sugar, taking on, you know, the big soda, and really being an advocate for consumers too, I think is something that I really enjoy. And I really feel like I've got a purpose, and it may not be everyone else's purpose, but I found that I have the ability to be able to do that and make change in my own way. And so what am I doing going forward? Continuing to do that, and Amazing. Being a consumer advocate, and everything from, you know, not just related to my own product, but I've learned a ton about water in the last 16 years of my journey, including, you know, how clean water is, like water that comes out of the tap, and not just in the US, but all over the globe. I mean, look, I think it should be a right, a human right, to be able to have access to clean water. It shouldn't matter what city you live in or what country you live in. And yet, you know, it's horrible. We don't actually have to clean up our water supply for humans. And that's a disgrace that we don't use that as, I mean, it really should be a human right to have, you know, that should be part of every infrastructure. Can I change every part of the world and make that part of everyone's responsibility? No, but one thing that I'm working on is really focusing the US and each state. There's 50 states. Every state has their own definition of what is clean water. It's crazy.
And it's honestly, it's so fascinating because we have the technology, you know, we have the ability to have this available for everybody in the planet. You know, I was just in Brazil I've been in Brazil multiple times, but I was just there for like a while.
Yeah.
And I was spending time in Chapada, and among like one of the prime, like the core resource for like that gives out all the water to all of Brazil. And there's over like 2,500 waterfalls there, and you could drink from the waterfall. That's how clean and beautiful and abundant this land was, you know. And it's so important, I believe, that having this type of abundance nestled to all areas of the planet is so important. And again, I believe we have the ability, the technology. What we're lacking is the leadership to create it and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. I was done. It's all good.
But that's the thing. I think most people today believe that, you know, the cleanliness of water, it depends on, you know, what they see in the water, whether it's like, you know, something floating in the water or the color of the water or the smell of the water. And there's lots of things in water that it may look clean, but is actually quite problematic. And yet I think that that's what I've seen in terms of, you know, the infrastructure, is that the definition of clean water, why is it? There should be one definition of clean water. Yet sometimes, you know, in different parts of the world, they don't recognize something. There's an ingredient. I know you're from Canada. I mean, there's an ingredient that is in North America. I'm quite sure that it's in other parts of the world as well, but has been identified in North America called PFAS, P-F-A-S, that is a known carcinogen, according to the NIH and according to the Center for Disease Control. Yet it's in, you know, it's basically caused by Teflon, and it was put into the water. There's a number of lawsuits that are out there against DuPont and a few of the 3M and a few of the other countries that are out there. And it was put into our water supply. Well, water flows through rivers it never leaves unless it's actually filtered out by super high filtration systems. And so it's gotten into our water supply. And, you know, just in the US alone, I think only 40 states actually recognize it as a known carcinogen. Wow. Why? I mean, when it's a health risk and why it's a health issue, why isn't it that we don't recognize it in every single state? And there's a lot of different reasons for that. But again, I think that we need to do more to actually educate people. And when we know that there's a problem that we can prevent and that we can make people recognize, I mean, this does nothing, for example, but increase costs of healthcare. And so there's a lot of people who would say, well, that's why we're not doing more. that, you know, these, the lobbyists in the healthcare industry actually want to, you know, create more business. Who knows whether or not that's the case or not, but at the end of the day, if something is recognized by a large organization like the NIH or the Center for Disease Control, both of them as a problem, wouldn't you think that that'd be a big enough issue for the EPA to actually look at it and make sure that it's measured in all states in the
U.S.? Why do you think that it's not being more like consciously focused around? Why do you think that there's not enough interest in making sure that people are drinking
because people don't know.
More healthy water?
I think it's because people don't know. And I think, unfortunately, it's, you know, it's the same issue. Look, it's the same issue with sunscreens. I mean, we came out with a sunscreen and a deodorant, as you mentioned at the beginning. I mean, I think that ingredients.
Thank you. And a lip chap.
And unless you actually know what the problem is, you just assume as a consumer that everything's fine. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on the shelf. And until,
how do you think that we can raise that level of awareness? Like, you know, and I know that you're doing it, we're doing it through platforms like this, and you
I think you do,
is there
you know,
a way
you
that
do
we
your can, homework the best to your indicate, the best of your ability. I think that that's the only way to do it. But again, like, I think what I found is that we can do it through creating great products that actually call attention. I'll never forget when we launched our sunscreen. I have a bottle right here. Somebody reached out to me and said, oh, somebody just knocked you off on. And of course I, you know, said, send me a picture. I'm really, you know, interested. We have worldwide trademarks on our sunscreen and on our water. When I saw what they saw that they felt was a knockoff, it was that we had called attention to oxybenzone, no oxybenzone in our product. Nobody was putting that on the label of sunscreens prior to us in a non-mineral-based sunscreen. And so I had come across some research that that showed me that ages ago in the U.S. in the 1970s, there was some research around oxybenzone that said that it actually enhanced cancer cells, precancer cells underneath the skin. If you had these precancer cells that were ready to be activated and you used a product with oxybenzone in it, that's how skin cancer could potentially develop. And I thought, well, why would I be putting the stuff on my skin if that is the case? And yet 99% of sunscreens had oxybenzone in them. And I thought, that's crazy. I don't want oxybenzone. But again, just by saying no oxybenzone on a sunscreen and developing a product, I had people starting to question, what is this oxybenzone stuff? And then they would see it in other products that they had at home.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And so if you can develop, you know, a product that actually calls attention to something that you know is bad, I think that's almost an easier way than actually running around and saying this ingredient is bad, because people will say, why is it bad? You can tell
it,
your
it
story.
Almost comes down. Yeah. It almost comes down to actions versus words. You know, it's, mm-hmm. it comes exactly. down to doing in like anything that we do in like talk about ideas, but it's like what we do and how we execute our beautiful divine rights to really support each other and be stewards that allow us to really say like, listen, this is like, it's not about talking anymore. It's about doing, it's about executing. It's about creating these levels of awareness or implementing levels of creativity that have come from deep within us to bring awareness to other people around us. And I think that that's exactly. really what you're saying. And it's a beautiful way of putting it, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
So I know we have some time. I know you have a little bit of time left before you go. But I really wanted to just touch base and see how people can find out more information about Hint. How can they find out more information about you? Where can they reach out to you? How can they connect? Please.
Yeah. Well, drinkhint.com is where you can get any of our products that we have, but I'm all over social at Kara Golden with an I, and I would love to connect. And definitely if you get a chance, my book is all over the world on Audible and also Amazon and lots of bookstores as well. It's really my own journey and my purpose and kind of discovery of kind of what I wanted to do and where I felt my journey would take me. And I hope you get a chance to listen or read it and wherever you are. And I really appreciate you having me on.
I'm super grateful. Thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you. I appreciate the time. I know our time, our presence is really unique. It's very limited. So, giving our time is one of the best resources we have. So I just want to say thank you. Last question before you go is, if you had 3 days left to live, what would you do?
3 days. I think hang out with my family and closest friends, my dogs, and just experience, right? And just love and really appreciate and practice gratitude. More than anything. So there isn't a lot that I haven't done. To be honest with you, I think I'm living a life of experiences and figuring out, maybe I don't do things today or tomorrow, but I have, goals and it's really with people I love and people who appreciate me.
Amazing. I love it. Thank you so much, Kara. I really appreciate
Absolutely.
You. I'm grateful for you.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Be safe and enjoy the rest of the week.
Hey, everyone. And thank you so much for listening to The Resilient Minds. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please make sure to go comment and like and follow us on iTunes or Spotify. And make sure that if you really love this, to share this episode and make sure that you're inviting all your friends to like it as we continue to unfold what the beauty of our minds does, more importantly, how powerful our heart level of intelligence can be when we combine our heart and our brain together. And more importantly, check out the alignment course that I've created. It's seriously there for you to take advantage of at www.ericbalance.com/alignment. See you on the next show.